Committee on Ways and Means for June 2nd, 2017. We have a relatively compact agenda. I'm hoping to get everyone out of here by 10 o'clock, but that may not be the case, so I'm going to open a work session on SB 5528, Land Use Board of Appeals. Senator Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, Senate Bill 5528 is the budget bill for the Land Use Board of Appeals, or LUBA, a specialized appellate review body with the mission of providing an accessible forum for resolving land use disputes quickly and consistently. The board is supported by the general fund and a small amount of other funds derived from the sale of LUBA reports. The Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends a budget of $1,926,784 general fund and $33,700 other funds for a total biennial budget of $1.96 million, including six positions. The subcommittee also recommends adoption of the board's key performance measures as presented. The Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 5528 be amended by the Dash 1 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussing the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Please note the objections. Do you have them, Ms. Barocco? Motion carries. Close out work session, open work session. HB 5005, Criminal Justice Commission, Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 5005 is the budget bill for the Criminal Justice Commission. The Commission develops and analyzes state criminal justice policies and sentencing guidelines, administers the Justice Reinvestment and Specialty Court grant programs, and supports the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Advisory Committee. The Public Safety Subcommittee approved a budget of just over $65 million, $57.4 million, of which is general fund, and 11 full-time positions. This is a current service level budget that is 3.4% higher than the 2015-17 legislative approved budget. The subcommittee also approved the Criminal Justice Commission's key performance measures as presented. Your Public Safety Coordinating Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5005 be amended by the Dash 1 amendments and be reported out to pass as amended.
Okay. It isn't that sad. Discussion of the motion before the committee. Yes, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a yes on this because I appreciate what Mike and his team are doing, but I am really hopeful that we can add back in the justice reinvestment money. If I recall, on 3194, the agreement in 2013 was that the savings would be reinvested back into justice reinvestment programs. And I think we've been missing the mark, and I'm hoping we can do better before the end of session.
Okay. Representative Wisden.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just to echo what the good representative said, but I'll be a no to flag it. I was here when, you know, we had problems with 1149. The counties don't trust us. They went out and did a good job, and we should at least, I worked with Senator Williamson, Representative Williamson, last session in public safety trying to increase the amount of money, and I think it should be increased. Counties went out and saved us money. We should at least give them that much back. Thank you.
Additional discussion. You usually don't do this, but for the record, the counties appear to be satisfied. This is not that budget with our community corrections budget. The idea of actually the reforms we did was because we could not afford the expenses that would incur if we did not do the reforms. If we could not afford the costs that we were trying to avoid, we cannot afford also to invest all the theoretical savings in things because we can't afford that either. And assuredly, those savings do not include the $250 million for not building a facility. So I don't think anybody's here advocating for $250 million for not building a facility, which would probably now cost about $325 million. So I just wanted to put that on the record. So, yes.
Could you repeat that?
Yes.
So thank you, Mr. Kocher. And I definitely don't mean to be argumentative, but I've had multiple counties come in and visit with me, not only from District 57, but from around the state. And there is some concern that some of the reductions that have occurred are going to impact them. So we stand forward to working with you. I know you have some real difficult decisions, but we are hearing from a lot of counties who are concerned.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I have to weigh in because, there is the concern out there, and there is on two fronts. One, and I, Representative Wizards brought up, when it was 1145, and that still stays there. That looms among the counties and our law enforcement community of this body reneging on their promise going way back that far. 3194, as you know, that I was very much a part of helping to put, that piece of legislation together, and the conversation that we had then and going forward that, dollars that cost avoidance and dollars that were saved would be going to back into the counties to help us to make certain that we're not continuing to build new prisons. And even for those prisons that are there, like Deer Ridge, as well as, now we're actually on the throes of looking at possibly having to do the minimum out the old women's prison. So the counties do have some concern. They have some concern as to whether or not we, as the legislature, are going to keep our word. And two, when they're actually doing what we ask them to do, that we don't turn around and not provide the resources to them in order for them to do their job. So I just have to say that as the chair of this committee, one of the co-chairs, that we have heard loud and clear, not only from some of our commissioners, but also from our chiefs of police, our sheriffs, as well as our district attorneys. So I need to put that on the record.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Any objections to the motion before the committee? Seeing Representative McClain, Representative Wisnett, and Representative Smith. Motion carries. Close that work session. Open the work session. HB 5007, Employment Department, Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 2007 is the budget bill for the Employment Department. The Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends a budget of $1,802,365,296 total funds and 1,298 positions, 1,239.78 FTE for the 2017-2019 biennium. The recommended budget balances expenditures with available administrative revenue. Additional positions and federal funds expenditure limitation were authorized to meet workload associated with the Federal Trade Act and promotion of the Federal Work Opportunity Tax Credit. Long-term vacancies are eliminated and positions are reclassified to make more efficient use of existing staff. General fund for the Oregon Talent Council is eliminated in the Employment Department's budget. 4.7 million other funds and 18 positions are approved for the 2017-19 efforts to evaluate, improve, and replace core business process and aging information technology infrastructure, with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services, DAS, unschedule a portion of the package pending a report by the Employment Department to the 2018 legislature on project status. Changes to improve key performance measures were also approved. A budget note is included that directs the Employment Department to report to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means or to the Emergency Board to provide additional information on the agency's submission to the Legislative Fiscal Office's report on liquidated and delinquent accounts receivable. Your Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends HB 5007 be amended by the -1 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question, Senator Monroe. Does the budget include the Oregon Talent Council that we created in 2015?
I believe so, but...
I think Mr. Chair has the
answer. Yes. Ms.
Michelle can answer the question.
Please come forward.
You give the same explanation I would, so please come forward.
Two positions.
Yes.
Six.
Mr. Chair, Representative Huffman, I believe funding for the Talent Council has been removed from this budget, but there are other mechanisms in place that will provide some funding for a similar function. And I think Mr. Co-Chair can give more explanation.
There is a bill that has passed both chambers of the legislature now and is on the way to the governor's desk. That moves the function actually to workforce development in HEC, and there will be funding in HEC for that particular function.
Mr. Chair.
And it passed overwhelmingly I don't know if it had any no votes anywhere, actually.
I do recall that now that you mentioned it. I had forgotten. Any idea on the funding, how much it'll be? It was $6 million for this biennium.
We should have an offline discussion. There will be about $1 million in this particular budget for the function. There were a lot of issues. The governor had completely defunded the program entirely in her budget, and so a number of people, Reardon, myself, and others, had to actually fight to find a place for it within the budget.
Okay.
With
Thank
no
you, Mr.
literally executive branch support for the effort. Yes.
The one other thing, colleagues, is that we had a very robust discussion in committee with Ms. Erickson and her staff about keeping the legislature informed as they undertake a massive rehab of their, or redo of their core computer systems. I think all of us will recall Department of Revenue, and that that in actuality has not lived up to the promise, but we have a very clear record established that there will be no surprises to the legislature. The agency will come in and report on progress made, including issues that might present obstacles to moving forward. And I think that the record was very clear on our desire as a legislature to follow the implementation of this new core system very closely.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. One of the major issues in Eastern Oregon is finding qualified folks who want to work. As I work with businesses throughout Eastern Oregon over and over and over again, the number one thing I hear is, we can't find workers. Mm-hmm. We can't find them. And the reason I share that issue with you is we've got two amazing managers back in Eastern Oregon, Deb Gargalis and Ed Sussman, who are with the Employment Department, and they are just doing a phenomenal job trying to address that issue. And so I just want to go on the record and make sure the Employment Department knows Eastern Oregon greatly appreciates and supports these folks and all the work they're doing, because it's a major challenge. But they're doing their part to try and work with small business owners to address that issue. And I want that on the record. Thank you.
Representative Gomberg, and then.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, and thank you, Senator Monroe, for your overview. First, Mr. Co-Chair, I wanted to echo the comments of Representative Smith. We have exactly the same situation along the Oregon coast, but I wanted to bring the committee's attention in a little more detail to the budget note. As you will recall, we've got about five agencies now that are carrying over $100 million in uncollected debt. In fact, we have one agency that's carrying over $1 billion in uncollected debt. Of those five larger debt-carrying agencies, the Employment Division is the smallest of the big five, with about $160 million on the accounts. And so what this budget note says is, first of all, help us understand the nature of this debt. Is it uncollected employment taxes? Is it overpayments? Is it something else? Yeah, second of all, how much of it is realistically collectible, and how much can we expect to be written off? And then finally, what are we going to do a better job of collecting the money that is owed to us? And we want you to report back on those items. Those are the details of the budget note, and I'm pleased to see that here. I think it'll make a difference with this ongoing problem of money owed to the state of Oregon by Oregonians.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr.
Co-chair, I had a question for somebody in the employment department. I'll go home, you know, on weekends twice a month and write checks from our business, and out of that check goes employee and employer contributions for unemployment department. And I can remember back in the recession times, this body increased the rate, the employer rate, because of high unemployment. That rate hasn't gone back down. We're still, I believe, paying that same rate that employers are. That's designed to fluctuate in good and bad times. And I would say we're having pretty good times, and I haven't seen that rate go down. When are we going to lower that rate at some point, or has that already been thought about and I haven't seen it yet?
Co-chair Senator Thompson, the rates that employers pay are basically tied to the amount of dollars that are in the unemployment insurance trust fund. So when that gets raised to certain levels, that triggers rate changes. So if you have not yet seen a rate decrease, that would mean likely that the unemployment insurance trust fund has not filled up to the point at which your rates can be lowered. That is in statute, and so I would anticipate it's just a matter of time.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Additional discussion? Yes. Representative
Wisner. Thank you, Ms. Co-Chair. Just very briefly, with the low unemployment we have now, not across the state, but statewide, what's period of unemployment payment? We weren't sure. We were talking up here on the NISIS. Is it 26 like the federal, or what's our unemployment and
duration of benefits?
Duration, yes, sir.
Yeah, duration of benefits.
Co-chairs, Representative Wisnett, I really couldn't tell you off the top of my head. 26 sounds familiar, but yeah. I don't want to say that is the rate. That's a better question.
We did go to 100,
for the agency in the back.
We did go to 100.
Getting a head nod from the agency.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional discussion?
Yes, Senator Monroe.
Yeah. If you haven't studied the unemployment system in Oregon, we have the superior system of any state, and it's designed to keep it always solvent. So the rate does fluctuate, and of course it takes it a while. When things improve, it takes it a while to come back down because they have to keep a certain amount of solvency in the trust fund. But unlike many other states that during bad times borrow money from the federal government because their trust fund is inadequate, ours is always solvent and always adequate. Some other states actually have studied our system and admired it and tried to emulate it.
Okay. Seeing no additional discussion, any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Close out work session, open a work session, Employment Relations Board. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. House Bill 5008 is the budget bill for the Employment Relations Board. ERB's mission is to resolve disputes concerning labor relations. ERB provides four main services to help employers, employees, and labor organizations resolve their disputes. One is labor mediation and training. Two is contested case hearings. Three is union representation elections. And four is labor appeal cases. The General Government Subcommittee approved a total budget of $5 million, which includes a general fund budget of $2.5 million and other funds budget of $2.5 million. The budget includes 13 positions. The budget is a $507,000 increase, or 11.2% approximately, increase from the 2015 legislatively approved budget. The budget provides continued funding for a private vendor to develop electronic filing for a case management system that is under development. Department of Administrative Services approved compensation changes for the three board members, as well as a reclassification of the board's office manager, and a one-time fund shift of $250,000 general fund to fee revenue. The subcommittee approved the board's key performance measures and targets. Colleagues, I'd share with you, this is an agency or a board that in the past had some struggles, but our committee really felt like they've turned it around and are doing a good job. So your General Government Subcommittee recommends House Bill 5008 as amended by the Dash 2 amendments and be reported out, due pass.
Discussion of the motion before the committee? Yes.
Yeah, I have a question. It might go to LFO.
The increase is pretty substantial, 11.2%, but the FTEs stay the same. You mentioned a couple areas where the money's gone. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on here.
Mr. Co-Chair and members of the subcommittee and Senator, the increase is related to essentially three broad issues. The first is the compensation plan roll-up from this current biennium's collective bargaining agreements. The second issue is related to just the inflationary factors that the standard inflationary factors apply to agencies. And the third issue is the policy packages. So that is the continued funding for their case management system to introduce the electronic filing piece of that. But there's the reclass of the office manager position and also the compensation plan for the three board positions, which are higher paid attorney positions, has been modified through the Department of Administrative Services Chief Human Resource Office. So those are the three general explanations. Senator and members of the committee, be glad to elaborate on any of them that you need.
Well, it's follow up if I may.
Yes.
We see lots of budgets coming through here, and I understand, you know, the collective bargaining part of it, but none of them are coming in with 11.2% increases. So it sounds like the reclassifications and, you know, a couple of tweaks in, internally, but it just still seems pretty excessive. So if you, I mean, that's more of a comment than it is a question. So,
if I may, Mr. Co-Chair and member of the subcommittee and Senator, there has been some compensation plan issues with the board members. And part of that is driven by the fact that there has been changes in the composition of those board members. And that has resulted in a disparity between their pay and the chair's board chair's position. And so Department of Administrative Services Chief Human Resource Office has tried to resolve that. Again, these are higher paid positions, so that has driven a large part of the budget change.
Okay.
Thank you.
Additional discussion? Objections to the motion before the committee? Please note Representative Stark, Representative Huffman, Representative McLean, Representative Wisnett. It's not going to pass. Please note Senator Hansel, Senator Thompson, Senator Girard. Motion carried.
Close that work session. Open a work session.
Related to the Employment Relations Board, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Yeah, I've got a couple of them here. House Bill 2262 makes a variety of technical changes to clarify and modernize statute related to the Employment Relations Board. Beginning in the 2013-15 biennium, at behest of the legislature, yes, ERB undertook a number of changes to improve its processes and procedures, including establishing timelines for issuing orders, identifying specific types of contested cases for expedited processing, involving stakeholders in a review of the board's processes and procedures, establishing a rules advisory committee, completing an independent review of some recent board orders, and involving stakeholders in a discussion of complaint or other actions that lack legal merit. The result has been an elimination of all case backlogs and a substantial improvement in the timelines for processing cases. The board has also reviewed and updated its key performance measures. House Bill 2262 is the final work product arising from this effort. Colleagues, your General Government Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2262 as amended and reported out to you.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objections to the motion before the committee? Senator Girard, Senator Thompson, Representative McLean. Motion carries.
Close that work session. Open a work session. HB 2263 relating to fees charged by the Employment Relations Board. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, House Bill 2263 changes the mediation fee schedule for the Employment Relations Board. The measure sets the maximum fee for the third and fourth mediation session at $625 each, which is an increase to the current $500 third session fee and a decrease to the current $750 fourth session fee. A mediation fee is evenly split by the participating parties. Most mediations rarely go beyond two sessions. This change is expected to be revenue neutral. Colleagues, your General Government Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2263 as has been reported out.
Okay. Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objection to the motion before the committee? Representative Huffman, seeing no others, motion carries. Last one. HB 2264 relating to fees paid to the State Conciliation Service by qualified arbiters. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, House Bill 2264 increases the statutory application fee for inclusion on the Employment Relations Board State's Conciliation Service list of qualified arbitrators from $50 to $100 and increases the annual fee to remain on list of qualified arbitrators from $100 to $150. These fees have remained unchanged since they were established in 2007. These fee increases are estimated to generate $8,000 in additional revenue for a total of $23,400 in the biennium. The fee revenue is used to fund the operations of the board along with general fund and state agency assessments. Colleagues, very quickly, I want you to know John from LFO has done just a phenomenal job in his work with this agency and these four bills that have been brought forward. And your General Government Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2264 as it's passed out.
Okay. Discussion of the motion before the committee. Any objections to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Thank you, Representative Smith. HB 2401 relating to trauma-informed training for child welfare personnel. Representative Rayfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2401 requires the Department of Human Services to provide trauma-informed training for new and existing employees responsible for licensing, certifying, or investigating child caring agencies and foster homes. The bill specifies certain elements that must be included in this training. DHS is required to develop a set of written guidelines for trauma-informed practices for employees that may be shared with the Oregon Health Authority, the Oregon Youth Authority, the Public Safety Standards and Training Board, and other entities. The bill authorizes DHS, subject to availability of funds, to provide trauma-informed training to others in child welfare system, including caseworkers, foster parents, parents, medical examiners, and educators. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2401 be amended by the Dash A6 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Senator Johnson.
I'm going to support this, and I support the intent. My concern is that this morning my business day started with a constituent calling about DHS. And this is quite specific in the nature of the training that is to be provided. I worry about training in general. Caseworkers are given enormous power out in the field, including the power to take children away from their parents. And I just am concerned that this is an agency that right now doesn't seem able to deliver on its core mission. We're asking them to do yet one more thing. There are going to be costs associated with this. And I would hope that we would look very seriously at a rigorous curricula for all managers across all disciplines, given the power that some of the field case managers have. And so I support this, but this agency, in my opinion, given the plethora of constituent complaints that I have, continues to struggle in terms of its day-to-day interaction with Oregonians.
Okay. Senator Winters.
Thank you. We've had extensive conversation with the agency on this very subject of training throughout the agency, not only when this was brought forth, but in dealing with some other areas of the budget. So your comments are right on. It's the same that this committee is having with the agency as they go forth to ensure that they're training not only the entry staff, but the existing staff as well as the supervisor and up the chain. So.
Representative Rayfield.
I was just going to clarify that the training that is being required here adds the department is already working on some of this training already and was planning to incorporate why this has like a nominal, you know, fiscal, because they were already planning to implement this, and they're also doing some additional training, which the Good Senator Winters talked about as well. The other thing to keep in mind, just in terms of whenever a caseworker does remove a child from a home, there is a judge that has to approve on the back end the actual circumstances. And no matter what a caseworker does, whether they remove somebody or don't remove somebody, they will always be on the bad end of things. Somebody's always upset. So,
okay. Smith, and then I'll come back.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, yesterday, folks from the Hospital Association had a reception last night. I had a chance to visit with a number of those CEOs. And one of the things they shared with me that I think we need to be queuing in on is turnover ratios. Okay, we always talk vacancy rates, but one of the big issues within our agencies is the turnover of employees. And the reason I raised this issue is I queued in on training for both new and existing employees, and I strongly support this legislation, but I just wonder what the fiscal cost is, not only to Department of Human Services, but as it shows, it's, this training is going to be shared with the Oregon Health Authority, the Oregon Youth Authority, and the Public Safety Standards and Training Board, and along with other entities. And I just wonder how much turnover, and I'm just asking this question, not looking for an answer, how much turnover do we have in these agencies, and what's the cost of constantly having to retrain new employees? And so I strongly support this, but I think as a Ways and Means Subcommittee, both D and R, we need to be looking at that turnover ratio and asking the question, is it acceptable?
Senator Johnson, then Representative Huffman.
Thank you. Thank you, Lawyer Rayfield, for pointing out what I already knew. My comments weren't adequately nuanced, but I know a judge isn't involved in having phone calls returned, site visits scheduled, the schedule kept, rides arranged and produced. I just am worried we're asking an awful lot of people in the field, but I used an extreme example, and I stand corrected. I still think that the training in general it needs to be uniform, needs to be adequate to the mission that they are asked to discharge.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would never, ever attempt to correct the senator. I agree with everything I've heard here. I'm excited about what we did, what we're doing with 2401 and HCR 33, shining a light on the need for training for trauma-informed care, explaining adverse childhood experiences to the workers, and to Representative Smith. And when you get into trauma-informed care training, you understand that it's as much for the employees and the workplace as it is our constituents that they're serving. So I'm excited about this, and I really appreciate everybody's support on it. Okay.
Senator Frederick, then back to Representative Rayfield.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to echo to two things. The trauma-informed care situation is really incredibly important for everyone. The fact that teachers and others are now involved in this makes a huge difference for kids and for families. And I want to also add my approval as well to what Representative Smith said regarding the turnover rate. That is something we have not paid attention to. It is costing us a great deal, and we haven't really understood just the impact of that. So thank you very much for bringing that up.
And I just wanted to respond to the good Senator Johnson and just let her. I agree with all of those issues that you mentioned. I think that those are real issues. As the subcommittee, the good Senator Winters, good Senator Snyder Hayward, we're all working on a package to help support the workers because they are placed in very difficult positions, and we are working to try and get an investment package that will support them in terms of training. The turnover issue is a real problem that we need to work on, staff management training, and there are a bunch of other things. The department is doing a very good job in helping us formulate this package with their own ideas as well. And so I'm hopeful that we'll all be voting on something that will start turning the direction to support the workers, which will in turn lead to better results.
Any additional discussion? Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Now we're going on to a fairly serious bill, but I wanted to say that the co-chairs here were sharing a little laugh about something that had nothing to do with trauma. I just asked my other co-chair, and maybe this is inappropriate, says,
oh,
don't all of us have some on-the-job training with the next bill?
Oh, give me.
You just made the signy die tape.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. In the absence of Senator Steiner Hayward, I will read the next prepared statement, the next pony or motion. House Bill 2503 requires the Health Licensing Office within the Oregon Health Authority to establish a new program for licensing and regulating the practice of lactation consultants. The bill authorizes the Health Licensing Office to adopt rules and establish licensure fees. The bill outlines requirements for certification and requires lactation consultants to complete continuing education related to cultural competency and trauma-informed care through programs approved by the office. The bill exempts certified lactation counselors and individuals who contract with the Oregon Health Authority to promote or support breastfeeding through the Women, Infants, and Children program from licensing requirements. The bill is anticipated to have minimal fiscal impact on the Oregon Health Authority. Existing staff in the Health Licensing Office will administer the program. Assuming an estimated 300 to 400 individuals will seek licensure, the Health Authority anticipates that fees will cover the estimated pooled costs of $31,682 for the 2017-19 biennium and $42,243 for the 2019-21 biennium. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2503 be amended by the -A9 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion on the motion before the committee. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Colleagues, I fully support the mission of this measure. I fully support the mission of the Oregon Health Authority. But I just want to be on record of saying I am uneasy about the management of this authority, and I believe there are internal issues that have resulted in inefficiency and lost opportunities for the state of Oregon and for the citizens of Oregon.
Additional discussion?
Yeah.
Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Go to the final item, HB 2845, open work session relating statewide social studies standards. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, House Bill 2845 requires the Oregon Department of Education to convene a 13-member advisory group to review the current standards for social sciences and identify opportunities to recognize histories, contributions, and perspectives of ethnic and social minorities. The advisory group must submit a report to ODE no later than September 15, 2019, which includes proposals for adjustments to statewide social studies standards for public school students in grades K through 12. The subcommittee recommends the -A5 amendment, which appropriates $43,149 general fund to the Department of Education to support a limited duration position, 0.25 FTE, to staff the advisory group. The amendment also sunsets the bill on January 2, 2022. The Education Subcommittee recommends House Bill 2845 be amended by the -A5 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Discussion of the motion before the committee. Senator Winters.
You know, I support the intent of this, and I'm sitting here thinking how long. It was 1999 when the first piece of legislation that I sponsored was signed into law, and we're still having this discussion, and we're still talking to the Board of Education to actually come up to include everyone. We've had some tremendous history bills and resolutions that have come across this floor over years, and yet we still have to badger, pound, beat our Department of Education to get social studies curriculum put together. Think about it, 1999, and we're in 2017. I don't know what the $43,000 will buy. I believe a few years back, we gave $200,000 for them to do this very task. I get very, very annoyed at the Department of Education and their lack of actually following the directive and dictate of this body. Just need to put that on record, because they have had this assignment for years, and still here we are in 2017 continually to talk about the inclusion and doing social studies that include all and everyone who has contributed to this great state of ours. I need to put that on the record. You can tell I'm very, very irritated.
Senator Frederick.
Well, I don't think I can match the irritation of the Senator. But I will say this, quite frankly, the Portland Public Schools had to deal with this situation in 1980. Put together a series of things called the baseline essays. If you want to take a look at it, it's online, looking at African American, Asian American, Latino American, and Native American contributions as part of a list of curriculum that they could be used. They were put together. They were then put on the shelf and not used. The state, the Department of Education, has those lists as well. I was just noticing, I get a little note every day about something new that took place. Not many people know about the raid at Kobahi Ferry. Anybody hear of that? Really important raid. It was a raid that was organized by Harriet Tubman. You've heard of her. What happened was on June 2nd, 1863, she helped a group of Union ships go up the Kobahi River and avoid the rebel torpedoes that were planted along the river. And they managed to then get 800 enslaved people to freedom as a result of that. Now, that sounds like a pretty good rate, pretty good thing to know about. It's a pretty good thing to know about, not just because you want to know about history. It's also a good thing to know about if you want to get past the idea that somehow enslaved people were passive about what was going on, that no one was doing anything. And in fact, people were doing things, but the kids in our schools do not hear about these kinds of successes. They only hear about slavery as a general sort of approach. This was something that was done that was effective, that managed to get some things done, get an approach that was very important. But we very rarely hear about this kind of thing. They need to hear about that. They need to hear about George Fletcher, the black cowboy who was at the Pendleton Roundup, who did amazing things. Or smoke jumpers. Smoke jumpers. The smoke jumpers we heard about yesterday. King Spain, who was Latino cowboy in and I just found out about this because my good Senator Hansel gave me a book that I had heard about, hadn't got a chance to read, and it's an incredible book talking about the Pendleton Roundup and the impact of the various groups of people who were cowboys in that area. It's a great book. You should take a look at it. But at one point, I was looking, when I was a reporter, I did a story on the Pendleton Roundup, and I came across a picture on the front cover of the East Oregonian newspaper of the Pendleton Roundup. There was a horse, bucking horse, and a cowboy on the bucking horse. Cowboy was obviously black. The caption on the newspaper gave you the name of the horse. George Fletcher was the cowboy, as it turns out. I found that out later on. That's the kind of thing that takes place, that took place in this state, and we have not paid attention to it. And we, as a community, people have been talking about doing this for decades. And it is, I won't get to my level of irritation, but there is an incredible level of frustration within everyone saying we need to make sure that we're starting to do this. This should not be something that, again, is put on the shelf. We need to have this as part of the basic curriculum for what happens for kids in school. I really appreciate the fact that we're going to do something about this, but we really need to do something. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I have a question for the carrier?
Can I go to Representative Smith first and come back to you? Representative Smith.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Coacher. I just had a chance to visit with Republican Leader McClain, and he shared with me that we want to associate with the comments of the two good senators, and we appreciate all that was just brought forward, and we're going to be strongly supporting this issue.
Okay. Back to Senator Winters.
I have a question to the carrier. Is there any reason why our advocacy groups, all of whom I know that probably have access, is not the body to be a part of that advisory committee? Why are we creating a new advisory group when we have the Asian community, the Hispanic community, Latino community, the Black community, and I know that pretty much all of them have. I know the Filipino community has written a book. I know the African-American community have. So there's literature out there. I just wonder why we're creating a new entity when we already have an entity that probably given the resources to them in order to allow them to actually bring forth all the documents that they have. Was that discussed in your committee?
Madam Vice Chair, it was not discussed in the Ways and Means Subcommittee. I can't speak to the Policy Committee where it was discussed, but it certainly sounds like I don't see any reason why members of those advisory committees couldn't represent a variety of the positions on this advisory committee. But I don't know what came up in the Policy Committee. Maybe Senator Frederick, you're one of the chairs of, or one of the chief sponsors of the bill.
It was brought up, and in fact, the advisory, the advocacy commissions have been part of this discussion overall.
Okay.
So they are not being left out on this.
Okay. Representative Huffman, then Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to stop short of recommending that we strip the fiscal out of this and just tell the department to do it this time, but maybe Senator Frederick, whoever can answer, on the bill, is there a mechanism in it to hold the department accountable this time and report back? How do we take care of the problems that we've been hearing for the last few decades?
That's not a question to the carrier. It's a question to Senator Frederick.
Does anybody who has the answer to that so that we don't sit here in a couple of years and have the same conversation?
Hold on a second. I have Senator DeBoer in the queue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we go back to our districts, I would almost say that almost none of your history teachers have heard anything like what was said today, and they would love to have that information. So getting it down to the history teachers, which are looking for things every day to enlighten their students with. And it was a great speech from behind me. Thank you.
Okay. How many more people have tried to get in the queue at this point? Senator Girard.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Kutcher. Colleagues, the reason that we laughed on this side about the Department of Ed is they just are not responsive to the legislature. Now, we put a budgetary note in 1 year that you will report back the progress of an audit. They reported back, we have made no progress on the audit. So, I mean, that's the type of behavior that's going on at the Department of Ed. And until we put our foot down with that department, bills like this are just going to go unheard.
Okay. Senator Johnson.
I will associate myself with my good colleague, Senator Girard, and I was going to address Representative Huffman's question. It isn't just this curriculum. It's everything in terms of responsiveness to the legislature and accountability.
Okay. And then Senator Monroe.
Thank you very much. 50 years ago, I was the chairman of the Social Studies Department at Tigard High School. I later served on the board of David Douglas. And I was in charge of selecting the new U.S. history textbooks for the district. And the one thing that I looked at when I was reviewing these various textbooks was how they treated, especially African Americans and Native Americans. And in particular, I would thumb to the section on the Texas Revolution and the Mexican War. And I wanted to see whether or not they treated these incidents fairly in terms of their impact on African Americans. The Texas Revolution, in fact, was against the new law that Mexico had just passed banning slavery. And the Texas Revolution was to protect the rights of Texans to have slaves. The Mexican War, which followed, similarly was to protect slavery in Texas. Most U.S. history textbooks don't reflect on that accurately, and I wanted to make sure they did if I was going to improve textbooks for the teaching of our students in the Tigard School District. I don't know if I did very good or not, but that was the issue that I felt most strongly about. And it's important, it's very important that students not only have access to social studies and history classes, but that they be taught accurately with accurate textbooks. Too often, we all know that most social studies and history teachers in our high schools are primarily coaches. I wasn't. I had a master's degree in U.S. history, and the only thing I coached was some cross country and the chess team.
Okay. Note for the record, Senator Monroe said 50 years ago, Representative McLean. You did say 50 years.
Right.
Thank you. And as a former student on the chess team at Condon High School, I appreciate your coaching. I want to contribute with my colleagues this thought. We, with this situation, are attempting to correct an imbalance. And it is the right thing to do. But this imbalance in our legislative, I should say, in our state government is not confined to the Department of Education. So the question comes often to us to say, you know, what are you going to do to meet the need here, in here, in here, in here? But if we don't ask ourselves, what structure of our system of government led to this imbalance, then simply correcting an imbalance and leaving that structure in place is a remedy that only lasts so long as the cash lasts. We have to have the courage to address the structural systems that lead historically to repeating these imbalances over and over and over. If there is in the Department of Education a structural system that just simply is in place, that ignores legislative direction at will, then certainly this will not be the end of ignoring of our directives. If there is structural systems in place in other agencies that lead to imbalances and we have to come in and constantly repair, then we amongst each other and amongst the public are evaluating each other based upon how quickly or how substantially we bring the repair. But we seldom look at the structural system that leads to these constant imbalances. And I would just say, as a Ways and Means Committee, that this has been a very good example. I hope the Department of Education addresses its structural system that has led to repeated ignoring of the legislative directive with regards to how we teach social studies. But I also would encourage everyone here to say that over the next 10 years, we have a lot of budget problems. And unless we deal with structural systems that repeatedly cause crisis that lead us to have to repair it, then we will just debate the quality of the repair. We will never address the system that leads to the crisis. And this is just a microcosm of a broader issue we're struggling with as a budget committee. Thank you, Senator Frederick, for bringing this bill. I look forward to supporting it.
Any additional discussion? Senator Frederick.
Yes, I wanted to answer a couple of questions that folks have brought forward. There is each one of the commissions and the Commission on Indian Services is supposed to appoint one representative to this particular this particular group, as well as Commission on Women, Oregon Disabilities Commission, and the and there are also a number of other groups that are expected to be part of this particular group. And related to one of the issues that we continue to deal with is that in many cases the Texas textbook adoption is one of the key problems that we have. The Texas textbook adoption at one point wanted to classify the slave ships as tourist ships. I'm not kidding. and they were objected to, but that's how they brought it out. We had a recent national education official have the same approach because they had been brought up being told that basically slaves had been brought over here at their choice. So we've had that as an issue for some time. The systemic issues are really key, and I really appreciate you saying that, Representative McLean. Those systemic issues are much broader than, in my view, than what's going on in terms of the budget in the state of Oregon. But they are the budget and other issues in the state of Oregon are important for us to look at, and things that we can perhaps have an impact on. So I really truly appreciate your words.
Representative Gomberg, then Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members. I really appreciate the comments and the conversation here today. I regret not following the discussion at the Policy Committee more closely, and that leads me to a question this morning. In looking at the bill, I see the section on ethnic minorities as including peoples of Middle Eastern descent. And I'm trying to understand in this context whether that is a reference to the culture of religious minorities in general or whether it's a more narrow focus on individuals of a geographic background. I wonder if anybody familiar with the bill might be able to help me understand that.
It is, if I can.
Yes.
It is, in fact, both, because there's clearly a cultural issue in terms of geographic issue, as well as a making sure, because we have a significant number of folks who have religious backgrounds that come from that particular area, that's important to talk about the impact of the of some of the Syrian refugees that have become whose family became a governor. Those kinds of things we need to make sure that we are including in the discussion.
Thank you, Senator Frederick, and thank you, Mr. Co-Chair.
Senator.
Yeah, just piling on, and my interest is for history, our social studies, was the inclusion and the contribution of all ethnic minorities in the history of Oregon. I want to make it totally clear that, Senator Frederick is talking more broadly and nationally. Mine was that if we don't know what we've done here in our own state, if we do not know the contribution that are made, like individuals of the Triple Nickels that help to actually make certain that we didn't have the forest fires that burned up incinerated during the war in 1944, if we don't know about the cowboy in Pendleton, if we don't know about the loggers in LeGrand, if we don't know about the contributions of individuals who have made history in our own state, let alone beyond our own state. The original legislation of both the bill that I passed in 99, as well as Senator Berger and I, when she was still here, wanted to make certain that our children knew of the contributions of all in the state of Oregon. There is a real reason for that, because once you know where you've come from and who helped contributed where you came from, you will know where you're going. And you also, that the child in Coos Bay needs to know that contribution that happened from the child or their parents in Pendleton or their parents in Ontario or their parents wherever it is in this great state of ours. And so for me, it was about social studies and the contributions of individuals that made us who and what we are today. And that was a contribution from a whole lot of people. There was the contribution of the migrant workers come here, and I mean a lot more years and years ago than what we talk about today. And so that was the impetus that gave rise when we passed those original bills. And dollars were appropriated to the department, and I'm waiting yet to see any form of curriculum.
any additional discussion on the motion before the committee?
Along the Snake River.
Any objection to the motion before the committee? Seeing none, motion carries. Before I adjourn, just one announcement, or two actually. Senator Steiner Hayward, for the record, is excused from this meeting. Secondarily, there may be a potential of another Ways and Means Committee meeting before Friday. We do not know yet if that's going to be the case. We will try to give you more than the 1 hour's notice. I can assure you, you'll get more than the 1 hour's notice. But because most of you are still very busy, the most probable time for that will be at the close of business, probably 4:30 or 5 o'clock, something like that, if one does occur, just so people are aware. We adjourn.
All right.
A bunch of us on transport.
All right.